Welcome to this Touch podcast activity, which has been recorded for Touch Neurology. This podcast aims to bring you expert insights from a multidisciplinary team on the role of GLP-1 receptor agonists in the modern management of stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes. Financial support for this medical educational activity has been provided to Touch IME by an educational grant from Novo Nordisk AS. In this podcast, an endocrinologist and a primary care physician are joined by a patient with type 2 diabetes who has survived a stroke and discuss the risk factors for stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes and its impact upon daily life.
Hello, my name is Tina Bilsbøl. I am a professor at Steno Diabetes Center in Copenhagen, and I'm also affiliated to University of Copenhagen in Denmark. It's an honor to be here today with two really interesting individuals. The first one is Yasir Yabait and Ms. Yvel Ferguson-Davis. Please, Yasir, could you introduce yourself in short?
Thank you very much. Well, it's a pleasure to be here. I'm a primary care clinician in the UK, and I have a fairly big interest in cardiovascular disease and diabetes, which, of course, are two areas that are intrinsically linked. And I'm the sort of a clinical lead for these two areas in my region in the UK, which is Northamptonshire.
And Yvel?
And I am also honored to be here today. My name is Yvel. I'm a patient advocate. I'm a heart, stroke, and also living with type 2 diabetes. So the discussion is really necessary today. So I'm grateful to be here.
And I was so engaged about presenting Sia and Yvel, so I forgot to tell you out there that I've been working within the field of diabetes, obesity, and incretin hormones, specifically GLP-1 now for more than 25 years, and it is really an honor to be here. And we will, during the next minute, discuss very much indeed what are the risk factors for stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes and what impact does that have in everyday daily life. And before going into really details, I'll just try to do my best to set the scene, because in short, we have learned so much about diabetes during, well, you could say the last 20 years, but indeed the last 10 and very, very much the last 5 years, because we now have new glucose-lowering drugs that can actually change the life story of type 2 diabetes. And we are so much further than just looking into the glucose, because today we know that, yes, glucose is an issue. An improvement of glycemic control or HbA1c is extraordinarily important in respect to microvascular complications, so eyes, kidneys, and nerves. But we have also learned a lot about macrovascular disease. We know that 2 out of 3 of our patients unfortunately die due to cardiovascular disease. We know that 1/3 of our patients with type 2 diabetes, they have cardiovascular disease. And of that, more than 90%, maybe even more, is actually what we call atherosclerotic cardiovascular disease. And I must say, every time I look at these data, I'm worried, but it's also very much reflect on my everyday life, where I have patients with type 2 diabetes. They're challenged because they have a disease that they can't feel. And I want to give them drugs. I want to tell them to do a good lifestyle for a disease that they actually can't feel. They need to take drugs that might be expensive and might even have some side effects. But that's the everyday challenge. And I think it's very important. We'll also talk about guidelines, that we have so much knowledge today that really consolidate how important it is to have a good dialogue with individual patients. I know, Yasir, that you also see a lot of patients, and I don't know what are your thoughts about cardiovascular disease and specifically stroke in patients with type 2 diabetes?
Well, I mean, cardiovascular disease for me, and you very, very eloquently set the scene, but cardiovascular disease, let's not beat around the bush, is the single biggest global killer. In the UK, it's responsible for 25% of all deaths. And of course, stroke you could easily argue is the most potentially devastating of all cardiovascular events because of the association with not just mortality, but morbidity and disability and resultant cost to the healthcare economies. But in type 2 diabetes, I mean, these are intrinsically linked conditions because in type 2 diabetes, cardiovascular disease has a heightened importance. As you have stated, the majority of our patients living with type 2 diabetes are not going to die from microvascular disease. They're going to die from macrovascular cardiovascular disease, either a heart attack, a stroke, or crippling heart failure. And they often, these events occur prematurely, usually, and patients can lose many good quality of life years. So I think we must be aware of this. We must share this in a in an informed manner with patients so we don't just get worried about the glucose. There's been, in my opinion, quite a lot of glucose centricity. It's very important to focus on the glucose, but we must focus on all of those other cardiovascular risk factors, which diabetes unfortunately potentiates. Obviously, there are risk factors you can't do anything about, being increasing age, being male, genetics, family history. But there are many risk factors that you can do something about, the modifiable risk factors, healthy lifestyle, central obesity, dyslipidemia, chronic kidney disease, we now know is a very, very potent cardiovascular risk factor. But I would put two risk factors in combination, and that is anyone with diabetes or metabolic disease in combination with hypertension. I think this really does turbocharge that atherosclerotic trajectory. And we've got to move away. And I'm so glad to see modern thinking of the management of diabetes has moved away from sort of a glucose-centric approach to a much more holistic, broad cardiovascular prevention approach, dealing with all of those sort of modifiable risk factors. But of course, it's not easy. At the end of the day, the patient is at the center, and we have to try and negotiate with our patients to try and give them the best sort of long-term outcomes.
Yeah, and I think we have a stroke survivor with us today, don't we, Val? And I think it's actually wonderful because we know that having type 2 diabetes on the top of a stroke, I mean, stroke is always devastating, but if you have type 2 diabetes on the top, the mortality and the rehospitalization rates are so much higher. So, Pavel, could you short tell us your story?
Yes, it's so important that we know the warning signs because it was missed in my case. And information is out there, but it's not available to everyone. You know, who makes an association with stroke, diabetes, or even heart attack? And for me, it came really late. I was in the middle of my nightmare before I understood what the diabetes did to everything. And I call diabetes like a gateway because it starts with that. And then if you don't take care of it, if you don't go see a doctor and get those needs addressed, there's going to be issues. So it comes from a standpoint of educating a patient, of understanding truly if they don't gain control, you know, just going to the doctors, and it's a collaboration. But a stroke is deafening.
Yeah.
I was 41 years old.
Yeah.
And I suffered a stroke. And my world became really quiet.
Yeah. And I think it's very important you say, well, you didn't know, but I think actually a lot of healthcare providers out there, you know, really understanding the correlation between diabetes, obesity, hypertension, and the risk of stroke, and treat, you know, aggressive early. I think that's very, very important. That's one of the things we have learned. So how are you today, Val, with respect to your stroke? Are you okay? Do you work, or how is your life?
Well, you know, once you've had diabetes and suffered, you know, traumatic illnesses, your life never becomes the same. So you learn how to live despite a diagnosis. Granted, I'm not where I want to be. And there's a lot of information. Once that diagnosis is initially done, you're like, I went from not even knowing about shooting up with, you know, pills and taking all type of stuff to a world of how to eat, when to eat, and all the guidelines. And for a patient who has just been diagnosed, And they're given all this information. And what do they do with it? So it's so important that we start the conversation of putting a patient's perspective of just how to navigate. You know, you have to go and get an endocrine appointment if you can get one. And, you know, the PCP specialist, so your whole world gets small because now you're navigating waters that you've never even dealt with or even understood what diabetes is in the first place. You know, and what I hate most of all is I was told to take my medication as coverage. And I know how deadly that is because I did not change my eating habits. My medication became a coverage to what I was eating. And we all know how that ended. So it's about making sure a patient knows exactly what the outcomes are, but it's most about making sure that PCP is the gateway, that PCP is everything as far as funneling information and just moving from a standpoint.
Yeah, I think I'm sure that Jesse fully agree with me that it's very important to get information out there to diagnose type 2 diabetes as early as possible. Unfortunately, we know today that many people with diabetes already have complications when they're diagnosed, and that tells me that they're diagnosed too late. And to go beyond glycemic control, also treat the obesity, the hypertension, the dyslipidemia. Can you just, in 30 seconds, Jamila, give a take home for our healthcare colleagues out there? What's your main advice to them?
This is all about early and aggressive and proactive management. We mustn't be reactive. You've got a patient with type 2 diabetes with risk factors. We shouldn't wait for the almost inevitable premature cardiovascular event before deploying the aggressive strategy. Lifestyle interventions should be the foundation, but now we've got tremendous evidence and guidance for weaving in interventions with proven cardiovascular benefit. And I just want to make the point that when we talk about cost of interventions, I hear this all the time, and it's a big bugbear of mine. We often don't associate that with the impact of the complications on healthcare systems. And whichever way you look at the data, the money that is swallowed up by diabetes-related healthcare, the bulk of that expenditure is actually on managing complications. It's not the cost of the preventative treatments that hurts healthcare economies. It's the cost of the cardiovascular disease, the heart attacks, the strokes, the dialysis, the amputations. You know, that's what really hurts healthcare systems. So it's not only morally and ethically the best thing for a patient to be proactive and early and aggressive, actually, it's extremely cost efficient.
Okay. Thank you very much for being on board today. It was a pleasure discussing with you. I wish we'd had twice as much time. Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to this Touch podcast. You can access more content on this topic on Touch Neurology at www.touchneurology.com. Don't forget, there are 3 other chapters in this series, so please listen in for further insights from the multidisciplinary team.